Welcome to Global Investment Voice, where we explore investment migration issues and opportunities from around the world. With a special focus on the U.S. EB-5 Immigrant Investor Program, we'll also cover citizenship and residency by investment programs from around the globe. If you're an investor, fund manager, developer, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of these global investment migration programs, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host attorneys, Mona Shaw and Rebecca Singh, as well as other investment migration leaders from around the world. So let's get into Global Investment Voice. Hey, Mona, I was pretty excited when I saw the title of this episode, The Real Scoop and Controversies. What's happening here with the Caribbean CBI programs?
Hi, Mark. Yes, you know, on our podcast over the years, we've really covered so many topics which have included speculations, rumors, litigation, legislation, and I can say the humble opinions of both Rebecca and myself. And I have to add here that on many occasions, we haven't been wrong. But there aren't many places right now that you are able to get an inside story on some of the real gossip and dirt which is going on in the program, not just EB-5, but CBI.
Yeah, right, Mona. And by CBI, we've talked about it before, but that's Citizenship by Investment programs, which are featured all around the world, right?
Well, no. There are only some countries in the world which do citizenship by investment. A lot of the countries, and again, yes, you're right, we've discussed this, but a lot of the countries are RBIs, which is residency by investment. And EB-5, the US program, is a residency by investment, also known as these golden visa programs.
Important distinction there.
It is. Well, you know, we could have had a lot of guests on this show. We invited guests who could talk about certain areas of the topic. But I can tell you, when you really want to know what's happening, you need somebody with knowledge, experience, and a real understanding of really what is going on, and who's not nervous or intimidated by speaking his mind.
That's right, Mona. And also a trusted voice and a familiar voice on this show. Welcoming back to Global Investment Voice, Sam Byatt. Sam, welcome back to the show.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you. It's nice to be with you guys again.
Well, Sam, you are one of our favorite speakers, not just because you have such an understanding of these global programs, but again, as I've just mentioned, you're not scared to speak out about it. And I can tell our audience there has been a series of controversies surrounding the Caribbean or Caribbean, depending on which part of the world you are from, CBI program, but not quite unlike a lot of stuff which has been going on in the US.
Yes, I think our industry has been rocked by a lawsuit. And this is, and the most important aspect of it is that several prime ministers, ex-prime ministers, are being named in it.
Oh, well, before you get into all of that, Sam, let me just say, yeah, I agree with you. And I think it was in one of the articles published by IMI that Armand Artin was quoted by saying, stop using our industry as a political football. And I would state that one of the most controversies which is out there right now is that RICO lawsuit, which was filed by MSR Media, by the movie producer Philippe Martinez against a whole bunch of influential people.
Well, first of all, the fact that Mr. Martinez has accused primarily the government of St. Kitts and Nevis of being in collusion with Galaxy, I think is a bit of lack of due diligence from their part, because Galaxy has been operating in St. Kitts and doing their, let's say, discounting way before MSR discovers where St. Kitts and starts producing movies in Nevis.
Sam, who are Galaxy for our audience who may not know anything about this?
Well, Galaxy is a company made of primarily owned by a Chinese lady, Mrs. Ying. She started working in our industry primarily with St. Kitts when about 2015, 2016, their idea was to build the Ramada Hotel.
Oh, so they're a developer. They're a CBI developer.
Yes, they're a developer.
Yeah, okay.
They had two projects in St. Kitts. The first one was Ramada Phase 1, and then second one was Ramada Phase 2. This was in the northern side of the island, close to the Kitishin Hill area.
Oh.
There was actually controversy in 2018 at a conference where their CEO was confronted by saying that their work was not progressing fast enough. And it took, of course, a couple of years after 2018 for the first phase to be finished. And so when I say MSR should have known about Galaxy's practices, they could have easily known that by simply asking people what's happening or actually going and visiting their site, which has always been filled with the Chinese laborers primarily.
Well, just to ask you though, Sam, I mean, this is a RICO style lawsuit, and normally, and it's been filed in the United States, normally RICO lawsuits are used against mafia-like organizations. And this particular lawsuit, I mean, why it's so dramatic, it includes former prime ministers, not only the Caribbean Galaxy folk, but also, I believe, is it the Keaton real estate developers as well?
Yes, but the most important one is the fact that the former CEO of the citizenship unit, Mr. Les Khan, is named.
Oh, yes.
And Dr. Douglas, which is a former prime minister, Dr. Timothy Harris, which is also a former prime minister. So they have been named, and this is quite interesting. Of course, Kerr Galaxy could have not done what they've done without people knowing what was happening, especially when they started phase two, where they were allocated thousands of units of application in order to proceed. Now, in order to fully understand what's happening in the citizenship by investment world, traditionally, applicants were contributing money to the government. And for example, St. Kitts being one of the first ones, there was a sugar fund, Sugar Diversification Fund.
Oh, you're right. St. Kitts was one of the first programs, actually.
One of the first.
Yeah.
One is actually one of the oldest.
Yeah.
And the idea was to set up a fund to help relocate sugarcane workers that have lost their jobs. Therefore, this fund was to help start new businesses. So traditionally, people used to pay money to the government, and then the government, in exchange of this, if they were of a good character, they were getting their citizenship. But in about the late 2000s, more and more developers started getting in on board with this new citizenship by investment programs, where they were promising the government that we're going to build something, either residential or commercial properties, like primarily hotels. And because people will invest with us and help us to lift a project, why don't you give them the citizenship in exchange of their investments in our company? Of course, paying also a little money to the government, which we call it commonly a government real estate contribution, which is a small amount, like $25,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, which is a fraction of the amount which is given to the developer. Because initially, St. Kitts was charging $400,000. So if an investor was investing $400,000 and was paying a small fee to the government, they could qualify for citizenship, of course, subject of being of good character.
Well, let me ask you there. You're talking about being good character, because one of the issues which really was raised in this lawsuit, I'm not saying anybody's right or wrong, but this was something that was raised in the lawsuit, was that MSR Media stated in their lawsuit that Galaxy had commissioned a Chinese company to carry out the due diligence for their project. Now, due diligence is very, very important, because that really is essentially the passport into a country. I mean, if your due diligence isn't approved, you don't get anywhere. And if there's corruption there, then there's a problem.
I think these are allegations. I highly doubt that anyone could have their pinkies in the due diligence process.
Why is that, Sam?
First of all, there are several companies doing the due diligence. These are mostly Western companies, very credible companies. Some of them are actually American-based companies. They work independently, but of course, they paid by the government. Secondly, once the due diligence is over, before a country such as in St. Kitts to give the final approval, there is the GRCC, which is the security group within the Caribbean countries, where they have a final say as well. So I don't know how would Galaxy be able to influence the due diligence. Was there a due diligence company based in China? Could they influence them? I don't think so. I highly doubt that. Now, if we apply the world due diligence to the entire citizenship process, that's possible. Could the unit could have done a better job at discovering that more units were sold, how was money being transferred back and forth? That's possible. But due diligence on applicants, I seriously doubt. I don't think this would be an issue.
Okay, well, that's good to know, because the implications of due diligence being messed up on a program like St. Kitts and Nevis is huge. It's enormous.
Well, there was a similar program called the Citizenship by Investment in Vanuatu in the Micronesia, where they did not conduct good due diligence, where several people which were on the Red Interpol list, which is serious, did get the citizenship.
Oh.
That could have been an issue there.
Well, Vanuatu has become an adjective in itself, you know, subject for another podcast, perhaps.
Yes. But in the case of the Caribbean applicants, I don't think due diligence on applicants has ever been a major issue. I mean, there's always people that will slip. We've had that in Canada, for example. We've had several high-profile people that were able to get the permanent residency, and they were able to come in. Probably people did get through the Caribbean CBIs. But to say that there was undue influence and these things by Galaxy with the St. Kitts program, I would say that's highly unlikely.
Hmm. Well, I do also feel that, look, I am not somebody who would ever, ever make a judgment on a lawsuit, knowing how you could, it's an unsubstantiated allegation, but it is pretty serious. Or it could be considered pretty serious if you could drag former prime ministers and the head of the CIU into a lawsuit and in a jurisdiction like the United States.
Well, first of all, the best place to have a case against someone is the U.S. So this is the right place. The legal costs are high, but definitely you can get great damages. But this is an ongoing case. The defendants haven't properly defended themselves. There has been some public discussion. For example, one of the people that was named is the CEO of St. Lucia program, Claude Emmanuel. And he's come out with some statements in the last days where he's mentioned that he was not aware of anything, any wrongdoing in St. Lucia. Of course, some of the people in St. Lucia, they were named, but I don't think this thing is going to go beyond St. Kitts, because it appears that MSR, Mr. Martinez, could show that he has maybe faced some prejudice in St. Kitts, because he was primarily and only working in St. Kitts, and he was given citizenship by investment facilities in terms of application he could go resell. That, yes. So therefore, someone who was competing with him unduly, he could see some relief on that. But St. Lucie, another Caribbean country, I doubt that.
Well, that's good to know, because the possibility of a spillover and tainting all of the Caribbean programs is a problem. But saying that, some of the material that has come out, and there were a number of WhatsApp messages which were published in the media, do show that apparently developers were underselling. This was actually stated by the Attorney General, who stated that, I think, that a person, one of the agents, admitted that they received $50,000 on $200,000 worth of shares and all of this discounting stuff. Now, our listeners in the US don't understand discounting, Sam.
Okay.
Or the allegation of discounting. So before we go any further, if you can explain.
Okay, well, there's basically two practices. One of them is financing, and the second one would be discounting. Like in Canada, for example, we have an immigrant investor program. It's in the province of Quebec. Technically, once an applicant is qualified, they are supposed to invest $1.2 million with the government of Quebec for 5 years at 0% interest or return. Of course, the money is guaranteed by the government of Quebec, which is AAA. So there's no questions about the return of the capital, and there's no interest. Because the money is secure, Canadian banks, there's a few of them, about 10, they can lend this money to the investor, and they charged all the interest for the money they're lending on day one. So this would be some kind of a financing where the government, their main objective is to collect $1.2 million for 5 years at 0%. In the Caribbean, similar things started under Dr. Douglas's government about 15 years ago, where people were doing the financing. But later, I would say in the late 2016, 17, another practice came out, and that was discounting. That was just making sure the client just walks away and the price would reduce. Now, I did mention this several times to the government of Dr. Douglas and Dr. Harris after that the practice is not correct, because what the applicant should pay should be the required amount. Like initially, St. Kitts was $400,000. Later, it was reduced to $200,000 buying shares in a qualified company for $200,000. And of course, they should pay a government fees for their investment. The government position has always been that, what's your problem? The government is getting their share of every applicant. But my point has always been to them that the main idea of the law is also to get that $200,000 to the government, to the island, to be invested, to create jobs, to stimulate the government, the economy.
Right.
That's where it has been neglected, to make sure that the terms of the law are 100% applied. So where an applicant is...
Sam.
Yes?
But Sam, let me ask you. So I think I understand what you're trying to say. But I mean, financing is something which happens in the US too. There are developers who help finance, etc. But this discounting, to me, it sounds like you're saying that if a program costs 200 or 220, and if somebody pays, say, 150, and it's on a what's called a discount, as long as the government gets a share, that's okay?
That has been the practice, I would say, under Dr. Douglas and Dr. Harris.
Oh, wow.
They were getting legally where they were supposed to. Now, should they have imposed or be more restrictive with people actually paying the shares? Yeah, they were not, I would say. They could have watched that and there would have been more money come in, and it would have been, would have cost more to the applicants. But because it was costing less, then there were more applicants. But at no point in time, the applicant has come under question because of due diligence or the bona fide applicants or their character. The only thing is that they got less money. So the sad part is that the government, for example, in St. Kitts could have made a lot more money if they were more strict with the rules of making sure people are actually investing, A, the money with the required amount with the real estate developer, and B, of course, they always paid the right fee to the government.
You know, this is one of the reasons I believe that the whole Caribbean CBI program has come under the gun really by the UK and the EU, you know, all the Schengen countries, because they are nervous about people entering under the a passport bought by less than what they should have. And they're calling it what? Security risks?
Well, the UK issue and Schengen issue is legitimate. They want to make sure that the people that are coming are not using these programs as a backdoor, because once you acquire a Caribbean citizenship, you can enter the United Kingdom and the Schengen zone without a visa. Of course, the issue that has been raised with UK particularly is that how come some people have slipped through the net, the Caribbean programs, and they were refused previously a UK visa to the UK. That was an issue, but that has been fixed now. Anyone that has visa refusal for the Schengen zone or United Kingdom is automatically refused unless they show that they were able to obtain their visa before applying. So that issue is there. But one of the main issues that will remain is the fact that the applicants applying now for these in the programs, because of the discounting, are people of lesser means. Meaning, I remember in the mid-2000s when my clients were applying for St. Kitts, their investment and contribution and all the costs were roughly around $400,000 or $500,000. And right. In my estimate, all of them were worth at least 10 times that amount. So they were all multimillionaires. But when you're bringing the practice of discounting, then suddenly your applicants, which are paying, as you were mentioning, $50,000, for example, or $100,000. So if we keep the same rule by saying they have a net worth of 10 times what they're paying, so that brings them in $500,000 net worth. It's far less. So therefore, they're more prone. They're not the same core. They're not the same. They don't have the same attributes that applicants had many years earlier.
Right. And I think there was an allegation of maybe a worker saving up, getting these citizenship, going into Europe and then just disappearing.
Well, yes. Last February, the European Parliament has advised us that many applicants that have this visa-free access, primarily with, well, many people that are from countries that have visa-free access to Schengen zone, seem to overstay or, once they're in, asked for their status to be changed, for example, claiming refugee status.
Ah, no wonder the EU and UK have had enough. Yeah, the whole refugee status issue is just another story altogether. But Sam, in a separate but equally relevant story, there were multiple sources present at a recent industry event in Grenada, and they confirmed that the Dominica's prime minister, and I also believe that the prime minister of Grenada as well, has stated that if they have any applications which have been discounted or paid less than a certain amount, those particular applications would lead to a revocation of citizenship.
Well, yes. I mean, something similar is actually happening. I'll come back to the Caribbean in Turkey, because Turkey has a citizenship by investment program. And there are, I heard the number of 20,000 applications where they had paid less than the required price as per the Turkish law, because they had the law previously that if you buy a property, 200,000 in Turkey, and later it was changed to 400,000. If you buy a property, then that will automatically qualify you, of course, subject of being of a good character, to apply for Turkish citizenship. What has happened in the past years, some consultants and real estate developers have proposed to applicants properties that are far less than the required amounts, far less than 200 or far less than 400,000, which is great because it's less money. But of course, they had helped them to produce estimates or evaluation of the properties, which were about the same or above the required threshold, required amount, and they obtained citizenship. Now, the Turkish government has learned that of these cases, and they're revoking citizenships very easily. That's not, of course, in St. Kitts too. Don't forget when the Dr. Drew, which is the administration after Dr. Harris, inherited the Citizenship by Investment Unit with their new government, they stopped processing of cases that appears to be discounted. And it appears that they want to go back and revisit certain applications, which is normal. I mean, in any country, any standards, if you don't obey terms of the law, eventually you have to pay the price, you know? Same
right,
thing in the U.S.
Right.
If you go to the U.S., if you apply for a green card in the U.S. and you misrepresent yourself and you go through and you get your green card, but if they discovered, I don't know, if they discovered 10, 15 years later that you had misrepresented yourself, they can reopen your case and they could take away your green card.
Well, yes, you could have a revocation of citizenship here. In fact, that happens quite often if it comes out that there's a fraudulent application for you to get your green card in the first place.
There was another case recently, just last week in Cyprus, because Cyprus, they also had the citizenship by investment about 10 years ago. A gentleman called Jay Lowe, who was involved with the Milesian pension fund, had applied, but had not mentioned that he had criminal issues in Malaysia. And later on, it was discovered that he misrepresented himself, misappropriated funds from that Malaysian government. And I think it was announced just a couple of days ago that they revoked his Cyprus citizenship.
Sam, do you think all of these will satisfy the EU countries and the UK? Or do you think that CBI is on its way out?
No, I don't think it's on its way out. It is really a program that helps governments. I mean, I've visited Dominica several times, and I can see that with CBI money, they've done great work. They have rebuilt villages, hospitals, community centers. So it really helps these countries to rebuild themselves, especially, for example, hurricane after two successive hurricanes. So no, I don't think they're going to go away, but definitively, as per the agreement the four Caribbean governments had, and I think St. Lucia will be signing it as well, so all five of them will agree to increase the price, work together, and I think that's going to change the whole image that everyone has of them. Now, the main question would become, as we say in French, the hot potato, would be what to do with all these cases that did not pay the required amounts. That's a big question. I don't think there's any question about bad characters got it, probably did, but that's like a very minute. And we have far more bad cases that are entering UK, Schengen, Canada, US on a daily basis. So I don't think that's a big issue. I think if the Caribbean governments work together, and actually maybe with other CBI programs around the world, to make sure they have a more robust system, particularly in regard to payments, which they could fully reap the benefit of these investments in their country, I think they could survive this storm.
Well, you know, they can survive it. I believe they will be able to survive it if they are also a little strict on their quote-unquote agents. I think the problem has been, Sam, is that programs like this were wonderful. You've seen how much good they've done. Same with the EB-5. But you get some bad actors, or you get some, you know, really careless agents or careless lawyers. That's where the problem starts.
I think the main issue is with the government, and you're right. They opened up the whole industry to newcomers, which didn't know how to play this game correctly. And they wanted to get immediate gratification, clients, and profits. For example, in Canada, we have a similar issue now with something called the startup visas, where the idea initially 10 years ago was to attract minds with great projects. Now, if you come to Canada, well, we just changed it 2 weeks ago, but during this last 10 years, you could come, you can just promise that, oh, I have a great idea. It's a startup project. They'll let you in, but there was no conditions for you after you got your permanent residency, or you guys say green card, to actually implement that idea, you know? So my advice to my government in Canada has always been enforcement.
Yes.
Go after them. Say, hey, you promised you were going to come here, start a company. We were simple-minded. We did not impose a condition on you to actually set it up, but you misrepresented yourself. You lied. Your intention was never to come and set up a business, because from the moment you came to this country, there was four of you. Everyone went to different cities and you guys assumed jobs. You worked. You didn't even register the company or try to hire people in your company to work. So right from the beginning, your intention was to defraud us. Well, if enforcement in Canada would be after these guys, there's a couple of high profile cases, people will know, oh, wait, we can't just cheat. Same thing in the Caribbean. I think if people that paid less than what was required were seeing their citizenship canceled, and this would become very public, and the consultants involved were also lose their rights to work with the units as a representative or service provider, then people would understand that they're serious.
Hey, Mark, didn't I say that Sam had a lot of knowledge?
You did, Mona. Well, we covered the RICO suit that was filed, the alleged corruption of the Caribbean citizenship by investment programs, and some of those integrity concerns of due diligence. You know, he didn't even limit himself to his knowledge of the Caribbean. I mean, he really is honestly a world-class guest, which is why he's been so important to Global Investment Voice.
I know. And Sam, thank you. We will talk about Turkey and Vanuatu and Cyprus again. But at this point, let me just ask you, you see legislative changes, which you've just mentioned, you see them coming in. Do you see that as really strengthening the Caribbean programs and CBIs as a whole?
Oh, absolutely. I think the five prime ministers, and I have seen them, I've sat and talked with them face to face in private. They're all very adamant to keeping these programs alive as an income stream for their governments, keeping their reputation, and then also another way of bringing foreign direct investment, because some of these investors or applicants do actually come in and invest. I mean, that is important. So yes, they can see a lot of legislative changes. I definitely think the prices are going to be increased, at least doubled by this summer, probably after July. I see more measures as per the Americans' recommendations, such as interviewing applicants more better, verifying their identities. You know, I worked in a project with the Five Caribbean a couple of years ago where we were actually going to use VFS centers. VFS is one of the global leaders in visa processing. They do about 20.
Yeah, they do the UK.
They do UK. Yeah. They do about 25 million visas applications. They have 2,200 offices around the world. So the idea was for every applicant to go to one of their offices to have their biometrics, their digital photo, fingerprints, everything taken, and also some of their basic documents like birth certificate, marriage, passport, verified, the original. So the governments, the Caribbean governments, will absolutely be sure that the person applying is who he is. I think measures like this could come in, strengthen the processing, the due diligence, and of course, price-wise, and maybe legislations such as in St. Lucia, where I think Article 14 or 8, where if someone commits a crime within the first 7 years of obtaining citizenship, they could lose it if that crime has a jail term of more than a year. By the way, Malta has the same legislation. So yes, the more enforcement post-citizenship, better processing, higher price. And of course, I think the biggest thing we need is the space where the consultants and representative and service providers are working. That space needs to be cleaned up. There's a lot of little people where they have absolutely nothing to lose, just money to gain by introducing bad applicants and discounted price.
Sam, thanks again for coming on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for having me again. It was lovely talking to both of you.
And until the next time, Sam.
Thank you for being with us today on Global Investment Voice. Do you want to get the most out of global migration and citizenship opportunities? Then head on over to our website at globalinvestmentvoice.com. From there, you can easily search and stream from hundreds of podcast episodes, as well as stay current with the latest migration news and investment opportunities by joining our insider newsletter. The topics presented in this podcast are informational in nature only and are not to be taken as specific legal, financial, or investment advice. Mona, Rebecca, and their legal staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com or by calling their New York office at 212-233-7473.